Good morning. My name is Dr. Chris Ulrich, and I have the privilege of serving as chair of the State Health Coordinating Council. And I will now call the first meeting of the council for this year to order. I want to welcome the council members, staff, and visitors to this first State Health Coordinating Council meeting of 2016. I want to thank everyone for being here and for participating in this important process. Today's meeting will have two sections. The first part is a business meeting that is open to the public but is not a public hearing. And therefore, discussion will be limited to members of the council and staff, unless questions are specifically directed to someone in the audience. The second part is a public hearing for anyone who would like to address the SHC and make comments on any issue they wish to bring before the council. This is the first of seven public hearings to be held this year, with the other six to be held this summer following the adoption of the proposed 2017 SMFP, State Medical Facility Plan, by this council. So this is the planning cycle for the 2017 State Medical Facility Plan that we will undertake today. The first thing we'll do is we'll take a few minutes to ask the members of the council for a brief introduction of ourselves to the public so they will know who you are and who you represent. In the interest of time, I will ask the members to be as brief as possible. And I'm going to start with our two newest appointees, and then I will go back around the table. So I'm going to ask Ms. Jarvis to give us a brief introduction.
She is
new to the committee.
Thank you so much. Hi, my name is Valerie Jarvis. I am a graduate of the University of Virginia. I have been in long-term care for the past 15 years or so. I've been a director of nursing for the past 3 years, and I'm in the process of transitioning to be a director of nursing at Carroll Woods, which is a continuing care community.
Good, and where is that located?
In Chapel Hill.
Chapel Hill. Mr. Lucas?
Thank you, Doctor. I am Brian Lucas. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina. I was appointed by the governor as an at-large member. Have a technology background and have been appointed to the technology committee. So I'm excited about that. Look forward to serving. Thank you.
Welcome. My name is Dr. Chris Ulrich. Got a little feedback here. I am an at-large appointee by the governor. I am in private practice in Charlotte as a neuroradiologist with Charlotte Radiology. And I have been on the SHC for 13 years. Sandra?
Sandra Green, on the faculty at UNC Chapel Hill in Health Policy and Management and at the Shep Center for Health Services Research. I've been on the SHC forever.
I think it's 20 years.
But I am now representative at Academic Medical Centers, and I chair the Acute Care Committee.
I'm Pete Brunick. I'm the president and CEO of Hospice and Palliative Care of Charlotte Region. I represent hospice on the SHC, and this is the beginning of my third year on the committee, council.
Dr. Rob McBride, I'm the president of Ortho Carolina in Charlotte. I'm a practicing orthopedic surgeon. I was appointed by the governor. I'm an at-large member. I've been on the SHC. This will be my third year, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I'm Trey Adams. I represent small business. Work for the Lundy Group, which is a development and commercial real estate firm who located here in Raleigh, focus a lot on healthcare development. And this is my second full year on the SHC.
I'm Ken Lewis. I'm the executive director of the North Carolina Association of Health Plans. I'm an industry representative. This is my third year on the SHC, and pleasure to be here.
I'm Steve Lawler. I'm representing hospitals as an industry member. I've spent the past 22 years at Vidant Health in Greenville, North Carolina, and now retired from there and now a senior executive with Carolina's healthcare system.
TJ Pulliam. I'm an at-large member currently living in Southern Pines where I practice GI. I guess I've been serving since about 11 years and was recently reappointed for three more years.
Denise Michaud, I'm a public health director in Caldwell County representing public health and starting my third year on the SHIC.
Hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Kurt Jacuse. I'm president of Health at Home Services. It's a home care company based in Hickory. I represent home care and home health. This is the start of my third year on the committee. And good morning to everybody.
Good morning. Jeffrey Moore. I'm an orthopedic surgeon from Moorhead City and at-large member appointed by the governor. And this is also my third cycle.
Hi, Prashant Patel, internist in Cary and appointed by governor, fourth appointment, 7 or 8 years, something like that, and to represent physicians.
I'm Steve DiBiase. I'm the CEO of Ortho Wilmington, orthopedic group on the coast, and I'm an at-large member, third year.
I'm Dr. Mark Ellis. I'm an anesthesiologist in Concord and Charlotte. I'm an at-large member, and this is my third year on the ship.
Mark, I think I got everybody.
All right.
Very good.
This time, I'd like to introduce Assistant Secretary Mark Payne, who has succeeded Drexel Pratt in the position of the director that we fall under as this council. So I would ask Mark to both introduce himself and then have staff introductions. Mark is also going to offer some insight into the joint committee presentation, which we will do after item 6 on the agenda a little later in the program. Mark, you're on.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to thank each of the council members for your service on the SHIC and for your direction as we work on developing the 2017 state medical facilities plan. Dr. Orrick, Vice Chairman Lawler, and the chairs of our three committees, thank you for your leadership in particular. By way of introduction, as some of you know, I served as the department's chief of staff for the past 2.5 years. And my first career, though, was as a lawyer for several health insurance companies here in North Carolina. I'm delighted to be part of the Division of Health Service Regulation, and I'm very, very fortunate to have an excellent staff of highly competent, seasoned professionals. We are fortunate to have the opportunity also to work with a great team of lawyers at the Attorney General's office. And I'd just like to, at this point, give them an opportunity to introduce themselves. I'm gonna start with my folks, of course, first. Lawyers can take a second chair, but I'll start with Shelley, please.
Yes, I'm Shelley Caraway. I am the Chief of the Healthcare Planning and Certificate of Needs section.
I'm Paige Bennett. I'm Assistant Chief of Healthcare Planning.
I'm Amy Craddock. I'm a planner.
I'm Kelly Fisk. I'm the Administrative Assistant for Healthcare Planning.
Tom Dixon. I'm the Database Manager for the Healthcare Planning and Certificate of Needs section.
Bernadette Fung Williams, Project Analyst.
Jane Rojones, also Project Analyst.
Mike Phillips, certificate.
Lisa Pittman, Team Legal, certificate.
Martha Frazzoni, Assistant Chief, certificate of Needs.
Katima Wilson, Team Leader, COM.
Julie Galatek, Project Analyst, certificate of Needs.
And I'm Bethany Bergen with the Attorney General's Office.
Derek Hunter, Attorney General's Office.
Very good. Do I have any other of our folks? I'm being
Elizabeth.
Can't see you.
Brown.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Again, thank you all for your service. I really look forward to working with you this year and in the years to come.
Thank you. Before we do any other action at this committee meeting, by order of the governor, we will review Executive Order 46, which governs this council. In accordance with Executive Order 46, titled Reauthorizing the State Health Coordinating Council, issued on March 4, 2014, we have certain procedures to observe before taking any action at a meeting of the SHIC or a subcommittee of the SHIC. I remind all members that it is your duty to act always in the best interest of the public without regard for your own professional, institutional, or financial interests. You should recuse yourself from voting on any matter on which you cannot meet this standard. The ethical standards for the SHIC require that each member disclose any professional or institutional interest he or she may have in any manner or any matter coming before the SHIC for action at this meeting. The chair will determine if the member needs to remove himself or herself from voting on the matter in order to ensure the integrity of the actions of the SHIC. The ethical standards also require each member to disclose any financial benefit he or she may derive from any matter coming before the SHIC for action at this meeting. In the event of such a financial benefit from a member, from a matter, the member shall recuse himself or herself from voting on that matter. Members of the SHIC are expected to and should confer with DHHS on any matters that come before them in the development of the SMFP. No member of the SHIC, however, may confer with any DHHS employee regarding any proposed provision of the SMFP or any proposed or pending certificate of need application in which the member has a direct conflicting professional, institutional, or financial interest, except in public meetings conducted by DHHS or by the SHIC. All of the members have completed disclosure sheets describing various interests and associations that they feel should be disclosed. Those sheets are available for review by the public. Kelly wanted me to tell you that the sheets for both contact information and for conflict of interest are at your place today, and she would appreciate them being filled out and returned today if at all possible. And this is the material that will be available to the public for reference. For those of you that are new, this is done in lieu of having to go through individual disclosures at every meeting, and has functioned well as a mechanism to meet this standard by the governor. If at any time during the year you have a new association which falls within the disclosure requirements, you should update that document accordingly, so that it's available to the public. I will now pause for a moment to allow the members to review the matters on the agenda to make these determinations. At the end of this discussion, I will ask if there are any members of the SHIC who desire to recuse themselves from voting on any matter that is on this agenda. A member who has recused himself or herself from voting is not prohibited from deliberating on the matter, and I will make that determination after review that participation by the member would impair the integrity of the actions of the SHIC, and I will make that determination. The minutes of this meeting shall reflect all disclosures and recusals made pursuant to the ethical standards, and such minutes will be provided to the governor for review with the SMFP. Are there any disclosures that need to be made by a member of the SHIC for today's meeting? I see no one indicating that they have a disclosure to make. I remind the members that if any other items of business come before the SHIC today that are not on the agenda, the disclosure requirements still apply. In addition, if in the course of deliberation an interest or benefit becomes apparent that you had not previously appreciated and disclosed, you should advise the chair before the SHIC takes action on that matter. Are there any questions about Executive Order 46 and its requirements for members of the council? Very good. We have distributed the minutes of our prior meeting of October 7, 2015. I need a motion and a second to adopt the minutes.
Motion.
Second.
All right. Are there any corrections, additions, modifications, or other changes that need to be made to the minutes that anyone has identified? Seeing no corrections offered, those of you voting yes will be voting to adopt the minutes as distributed. I don't anticipate a no vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It is adopted. We'll move on now to the agency recommendation for the 2016 SMFP operating need determination. We'll start with a presentation by Amy Craddock, who is the planner responsible for this area.
Good morning, thank you. Novant Health notified the Healthcare Planning and Certificate of Needs section that there were data errors in their 2015 license renewal application for Novant Health Rowan Hospital. Procedures that were not surgical cases were accidentally counted as such. This led to the inclusion of incorrect information in the 2016 State Medical Facilities Plan. Table 1 of the agency recommendation document that's in your packet, it's on the flip side of the recommendation of the agency report, shows that correction of these errors led to a decrease of 1,510 outpatient surgical procedures and a decrease of 1,226 inpatient procedures. Applying the standard methodology to the corrected data eliminates the need determination for one operating room from the Rowan County service area. Novant has requested an amendment to the 2016 SMFP to remove this need determination. The first paragraph of Chapter 2 of the State Medical Facilities Plan provides a mechanism to amend the plan for error corrections after the governor has signed it. Therefore, the agency's recommendation is that the SHIC hold a public hearing and consider recommending to the governor the removal of this need determination from the approved 2016 State Medical Facilities Plan. Thank you. That's it.
You may want to stay at the podium in case there's a question.
Yeah, I'm just kind of sliding over so I can see you.
This is both an unusual situation and one that has rarely had to be dealt with in the manner that we are proposed, that is proposed by the agency. So I think before I offer any editorial kind of frame around this, are there questions, concerns, or comments from any member of the council about the agency's proposal? And then we'll explain how it will work. Yes.
I had a question. Exactly how did that happen?
How does which happen?
How do you get 1,600 cases listed in as part of your report, and then you turn around and say they really shouldn't have been there?
How it occurred was that cardiac catheterization, endovascular and peripheral vascular procedures, some outpatient GI endoscopies, and outpatient pain management procedures were inadvertently included as surgical procedures when they're not surgical procedures. That's how it occurred.
And the reporting of that was reported by the organization?
By the hospital.
Yes, okay.
Right.
It wasn't an accounting error.
Right.
By the department, it was a kind of pushing information up by the healthcare provider.
Right. Who then self-reported the error, but after the plan had been approved.
Right, but then it created this need for a new OR. Is that what the issue is?
The error created the need. Had the correct data been submitted, there would be no need in that area.
I have a question in terms of
the
actual procedure for that would occur. Assuming you would have one public hearing, correct?
Yeah. Let me go through how this will work.
Okay.
We will vote today on whether or not to proceed to public hearing. That'll be the action item. If you vote no, you will essentially be saying to leave the plan as it is. Essentially, the need will stay in the plan and we'll deal no further with it. The petitioner is still free to go to the governor if they see fit, but we have chosen to instead go through a public process rather than act indirectly. If we vote yes, we will have a public hearing, which Dr. Green will chair. And then following that, we'll distribute the comments to all members of the committee and then hold a conference call for this committee to vote on this single item, the outcome of which would be the recommendation to the governor to amend the plan, if that's what's approved. If you decide the comments indicated should be disapproved, that is, the plan stays the way it is, then that's also an end point. So this is an opportunity to essentially give this council and the public an option to talk about or comment on this correction. We normally treat the plan as fixed in stone once the governor signs it. There are a number of issues that surround this, including the fact that the rate of growth in Rowan County is such that no applicant may qualify under the review rules to actually win the CON if it stays in the plan. This is an expensive process, essentially, that will end up, could end up, I can't predict the outcome, but could end up essentially in an unsuccessful application of one or more groups because of the lack of the growth curve. You remember the Lincoln County MR has the same issue that we've had petitions about. The growth rate is so low that yes, it's triggering a need, but nobody can actually get to an application review criteria of growth for any applicant. So that's the basic situation. So if the council votes no, then we end the discussion today. And the plan stays the way it is. Does that make sense, or have I got people totally confused?
Is there a mechanism to correct it in the 2017 plan year if we don't correct it this year?
It will fall out by the numbers in the next plan, and assuming so, that the license renewal application is properly filled out. I think we'll be sensitized enough. We'll double check those figures.
Logistically speaking, would the public hearing be held in conjunction with our next meeting, or are we going to have to hold a special meeting?
We will have to hold we'll have to determine a date. We have to give public notice. This has to be resolved one way or another by May 1st in order to have the 60-day before the review cycle. If we vote to do nothing, then, you know, we are where we are. But if we choose to remove it from the plan, we need to have a 60-day point beyond that removal, or the governor, give the governor time to act should he choose to follow our suggestion. If it's removed from the plan, it has to occur before 60 days. This provision is in the methodology in the OR plan that is not applicable to the whole plan, but it is there. It's rarely used. Most of the errors have not been of this nature, nor have we received a formal request to change the plan when an error has been found.
I have another question. Do you feel that if we would say no, it would set a precedent to circumvent the JIC at a later time, and perhaps would it open up the door for a future challenge or and set a precedent where we actually allowed bad data to affect our decision?
Just one thought on that. I think, I do think, the greatest issue that we face, if no, is that the organization that's making the request to take the asset out of the plan, based on, corrected data and based on kind of our normal methodology, that organization would then go to the governor and ask the governor to directly modify that plan. I think, by opening that door, that creates, a precedence and issue later on. So, my sense is that, if it can be resolved through this process, that albeit seldom used, is used to kind of correct, a methodology and an allocation that shouldn't have been in there had Novant correctly submitted, their data. I feel confident that going down that route, kind of yields a better long-term outcome than opening the door for somebody to seek governor or legislative relief to solve an issue that really we can solve ourselves.
Dr. Chairman, yes, sir.
In consideration of the entities who might apply for a CON this year for that need, does our time frame for this special hearing and reconsideration help prevent them from spending the resources to develop an application, firstly? And then secondly, if the need stays in the plan, do they have time to then apply successfully for a CON after the decision is made?
At the 30,000 foot level, yes. That's the 60 day window, but it's unfair within 60 days. By then you've made your commitment, you've made your investments. I'd like to solve it by the end of this month. personally, or at least get it to the governor. I can't predict what the governor may or may not choose to do. We can make a recommendation. He can choose not to act on it. At the end of the day, it's his plan. But this gives us an opportunity to at least give direction rather than have phone calls be made from the governor's office saying, what do you think we ought to do? And I also agree very much with Steve. I don't like and I don't favor individual petitioners trying to skirt the entire process by going to the governor directly, as happens many years. We have people after we finalize the plan in October who then go to the governor's office and ask for change X, Y, or Z based on their particular concern, relationship, whatever. In recent years, most governors have been resistant to going against our recommendations, but they have the power to do it. You know, it's always there, but that is not something we should, in my view, we should either reward or encourage as a way to seek change based on a petitioner's, you know, desires. I'd much prefer the open process where everybody has a chance to comment, and, you know, the record is what the record is. But if you feel that it should stay in and recognize that if no one wins, it goes out of the plan the following year, then you should vote no to this recommendation to go this cycle. I've had a lot of discussions, and we've gone to the Attorney General to try to get some guidance on this. And I think this is a solid, defensible, transparent way to deal with an issue which is unfortunate, but I've always insisted that data integrity is fundamental to what we do. And when we have data that clearly was not appropriately submitted, we should do our best to make those changes. And if you recall, we always have that little boilerplate the staff can update based on new data until the plan is signed. And we'll do a bunch of those this year again. It's not a perfect situation. I am very concerned that we'll have a number of applicants. It could be physician groups. It could be a hospital group. It could be more than one hospital group, someone who wants to enter Rowan County. File applications, and none of them have actually can qualify for the appropriate growth within that application. We'll then end up with a group of people either appealing that decision or suing the guy who gets it or the lady who gets it. And of course the bills keep. And I think it's also true that most, at least I believe, a one-room outpatient surgery center is not the most efficient arrangement you can have. The two rooms work a lot better. So there's just a lot of different things. There's no perfect answer, but in consultation with the secretary, with the AG's office, with the staff, the consensus that emerged is we should go through a public, transparent process and give the governor's office direction that is publicly recognized as having been vetted.
Yes, sir. To just give some context, since most of this shit has sort of turned over in the last 3 years, this came up probably 5 or 6 years ago with home health. Yes. And same process. We had a public hearing to make sure that the data was, you know, correct, and we're putting out plans that are based on accurate data. So there is precedence for this. And it seemed to work. There was a lot more hair on that one, but it seemed to work. It seemed to work really well. If you have an hour, I'll explain it to you.
Let's just say that all opinions were voiced and heard.
Yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, do you need a motion to accept staff's recommendation?
Not quite yet. Okay. I want to make sure that everyone has had their, you know, basically put their idea out or offered their viewpoint on how to handle this before we actually go to the vote, Steve.
And still have a hard time understanding how a large hospital system who does this all day long submits such a large amount of inaccurate data. It's just hard for me to understand.
Do you want me to call the representative of the system to the podium?
What, the public forum, maybe?
What's the public hearing? Oh,
is somebody here?
I didn't ask them to be prepared to speak on the topic. But data entry errors are not unknown, and in fact, we correct a variety of them. Mm-hmm. The staff does try to go through a year-to-year look back to see if there's some unexplained bump.
And it's related to how the license renewal applications or proven data in some cases is processed and how it's labeled. We've had these errors before. Most of them get picked up during the planning cycle, not after, you know, after the fact. Is this particular one, which was self-reported by the organization once it, you know, realized that they're, and I suspect, but I won't ask them, but my guess is it won't happen again, at least at that site.
Yep.
But it is what it is. And the real question, Rob, is now that we know it's there, what is our best manner to deal with the issue? The simplest thing for me is just to leave it. Just say it's there, you know, too bad, door's closed. But I'm not sure that's the outcome we should, you know, that is the most appropriate public policy process to get a fair resolution, whatever that turns out to be. I would say at the public hearing, if one feels it should stay in the plan, be prepared to explain why. And that's part of our process, and that might sway our opinion. That's what you do in the public hearing, is make the argument for why X or Y ought to be the solution for the issue at hand. And that's why I'm not going to hold a vote right after the public hearing. I want to circulate the opinions that were submitted to everybody on the committee, and then hold, but you will have to be on the phone to vote. We're not going to take proxies. Mr. Lawler, that motion is now in order.
So I would make a motion to accept the staff's recommendation in regards to the issue regarding the 2016 state medical facility plan.
I need a second.
Second.
It's seconded by Dr. Moore. Any further discussion before we vote? So to recap, if you vote no, you have decided the plan is what it is and no action should be taken. If you vote yes on this motion, we will then, in conjunction with the staff, determine the dates. I think we have to have 14-day notice for a public hearing. Is that correct? So it's going to be a couple weeks away. We'll work out with Sandra what that date should be. We will provide a dial-in number, and we are going to encourage people to dial in and listen to the hearing. So that's basically yes and no. That's what goes. So all of those in favor of the motion to go through the public hearing process, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? It's unanimously adopted. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, if there are other members of the SHIC that are interested in attending the public hearing as a show of support for Dr. Green, I'm sure that you would invite us to do so.
Might be a brief hearing.
It could be.
Sandra is charming. You'll enjoy her company. I've already shared with her that I have to dial in, but I'm not going to be able to make the trip most likely. But very good. I appreciate all the input, and we'll look forward to working through this process. Amy, thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to the agency recommendation. Let's see, we did that one. Next is the Long-Term Behavioral Health Committee Report on Nursing Home Methodology Work Group, to be given by Dr. Pulliam.
Thank you, Dr. Ulrich, and this will be very brief. As you may know, we did have a work group convened in the nursing home industry, and it was broadly represented. I think we did a fantastic job of getting all the right people around the table, and had several meetings through the spring and fall. In fact, we even had one meeting on November 4th after the last time the SHIC had met. And the process was very robust. The nursing home methodology was looked at very, very carefully. Lots of expert opinion was brought to the table, and lots of changes have been made, which I think have made for a more robust document and for a better planning process. I won't go into a lot of detail, but I'll mention just a few things that the work group has proposed. As part of it, though, the one thing that I will say is that it's streamlined the process. We've been able to eliminate several of the policies, specifically policies NH1, 3, NH4, and NH7, and made some wording changes to three other policies. So it is a much more enhanced planning document that's come out, and I think it'll really bode well for the future of nursing home planning statewide. So some of the changes we had actually brought to the last CHIC meeting and had come through the long-term behavioral health committee, some of these changes that we've already suggested and already been pretty well approved is that we're going to use one use rate, no age groups, calculated by county with the annual change rate projection of 36 months. We'll be using a smoothing of average change rate applied to each county with substitution of the state rate of a half standard deviation both above and below the mean. We will be using a vacancy factor applied to the bed utilization summary of 95%. For any need determination, use of the higher between the median occupancy rate amongst all facilities in the county or the county weighted average will be considered, and we'll be aligning all the exclusions for bed and occupancy. Since the work group met, the other issues that we're going to bring to fore, 100% exclusion for the continuing care retirement community beds, those are the NH2 beds. The maximum bed needs for each service area will be 150 beds. And as I mentioned, we've eliminated four of the prior policies and made some working changes to three of the policies. So again, the output is a much more robust planning process that will, I think, serve the state well, since no one has actually looked at the nursing home methodology change for well over 20 years. All the work that was done over the spring and summer and fall will make for a much more effective planning process. And that's all I have to report.
Thank you, Dr. Pulliam. A succinct report of what was a great deal of work on your part, on the participants' part, and the staff, and I'm deeply appreciative of the input and an effort to get to a common revision. So thank you all very much. This will go through the normal committee process. It is not an action item, so it will appear on the working agenda of the long-term care committee. Assuming that it's adopted, it will then go out for public comment this summer and hopefully be adopted this fall. I'll also take a moment to remind or make a public statement that I've asked each of the committee chairs to look at their methodologies and provide me with sort of a working list of those that they feel are most in need of a reexamination. As Dr. Pulliam alluded, this particular policy was more than 15 years old, and the world has changed. Some of them, there is no economic pressure to change what is obviously not quite right, and Gamma Knife might be one of those in the technology, because no one wants another Gamma Knife at the present time.
But we're gonna start to do a systematic review process of some of these. I welcome, if anyone in the public wants to offer input via the staff or to me directly about something they think needs a look, I welcome that. We only have so much bandwidth. And so we will, working with the secretary and the staff, we will try to prioritize those types of reviews similar to this work group. To continue to try to make the plan as good a document as we can. And so I'll just say that's ongoing in the background. We're not going to talk about it a whole bunch. But as we go along, I am certainly committed to going through that process as resources permit. And we'll go from there. I'm now going to ask Mr. Payne to talk a little bit about the Joint Legislative Committee and the presentation that the staff made recently and any other associated issues he'd like to share with us.
Sure. Just to make the council members aware, if you were not, at the request of the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee for Health and Human Services, our planning and CON section chief, Shelley Caraway, presented an overview of the 2016 State Medical Facilities Plan to the committee on February 9th. She did an excellent job. I was just very, very proud of her and the job she did. The committee's focus, and this focus was part of the direction that we were given in preparing the presentation, was really around the need determination for adult and child adolescent psychiatric and substance abuse beds. Shelley presented the respective need determination both in the 2015 and the 2016 plan, and noted that in 2015, the applications for adult beds were less than the determined need, and there were no applications received for the child and adolescent beds. So just wanted you all to be aware that the General Assembly is certainly interested in and concerned about the care of mental health patients in our ERs and hospitals, and was really beginning to do an assessment of what impact the CON process might have on that. And I think, in my opinion, it's somewhat evident it's not the matter of the CON process negatively impacting that as much as it is just a lack of market interest in that particular area, is my opinion. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions that any of you would like to ask the secretary before we move to the next section of the meeting? You must be doing a great job. Everyone's satisfied.
Just 2 months on the job.
Be grateful. Okay. I need a motion at this point to recess. Not adjourn, but to recess this business meeting and move on to the public hearing phase. Kurt Jacuz has moved.
Seconded.
So we will go into recess and move to the public hearing process. I currently only have two people signed up today for public hearing. If someone else wishes, are there any additions accumulating? If someone else wishes to speak, I can make a provision for that. Since we only have two speakers and we're more than on time, I will limit the speakers each to no more than 7 minutes. They're going to co-present, so I think I just gave them 14 minutes. But anyway, this is a public hearing. We're now calling to order. We have two people signed up to speak. If anyone has not signed up, please indicate now, as I've said. I will start calling the names of those wishing to speak in order in which they appear on the sign-in sheet. Please step to the podium when your name is called. Identify yourself and the organization that you represent, and we'll look forward to receiving your comments. At the risk of not getting these two names right, I think it's Dr., is it Jamie Jollis?
That's correct.
I got it right. And Jim Zidar or Zidar?
Zidar.
So I've got the accent wrong, too.
It's all right.
Either one of you can start the presentation. And you're on.
We'll do it together. He's my partner.
And you guys are on the clock.
I've got a clinic patient in 15 minutes, so we'll go
down. Well, your tag team friend may want to continue, but no, please do.
My name's Jim Zidar. I'm a cardiologist at Rex Healthcare, along with Dr. Jollis. We're in a 32-person group, North Carolina Heart and Vascular, and we are part of a large healthcare network between UNC and Rex. And for me personally, this is the third time in 3 years I've come before this committee to ask for the state and the SHIC to change the methodology for the cardiac cath lab utilization in the state. And this request has occurred several times due to a change, I think, in at least the cardiology landscape in Wake County, where physicians have aligned with health systems and become more in an employed model. We have three large systems, for those of you in other counties, a Wake Med system, a Duke system, and a Rex UNC system. And we are currently practicing solely in the Rex and UNC system. And since 2011, when a lot of this change has taken place, in the Rex cath lab, our utilization has doubled. And we are now operating at 116% of our fixed cath lab capacity. Last year, we came to the medical facilities planning staff and they recommended approval. We were at 100% capacity, but it was eventually turned down. And I think the problem is that the methodology perpetuates an imbalance between the highly utilized and underutilized providers. That is that if you're a system that's utilizing things highly, this could go on indefinitely as long as somebody else in the county is underutilizing their cath lab space. And that's what's occurring currently, is that we are way over capacity, whereas Duke Raleigh, Wake Med and Cary and the larger Wake Med on New Bern Avenue are underutilized. And so this county problem can go on indefinitely. And that lends us to terrible logistic problems that Dr. Jollis will talk to you about as just an example of how it affects patients, hospital stay. Right now, we're taking lots of transfers in from other counties on helicopters for ST elevation myocardial infarction, and the elective cath patient gets pulled off the table and often can sit for hours and maybe not even be done that day, which is a very inefficient use of all of our time and especially makes for unhappy patients. We've had prior discussions on this matter, and right now we see that it's a very expensive system. Currently, we're running staff, running regular cath lab staff through 9 p.m. at night, starting at 6 in the morning. We only have 4 CONs for a cath lab. We could currently fix this, as we have 2 vascular labs, with a simple $30,000 software upgrade to use a lab we already have that's not licensed for cardiac caths and could easily solve the problem without much expense to the system at all. Right now, all the physicians in our practice are part of our system, and we're not doing procedures at Wake Med, nor are the Wake Med physicians doing physicians in the UNC Rec system, nor are the Duke physicians doing cases outside of the Duke system. So we're sort of isolated to the health systems that we're working in. So rather than duplicating lots of resources and trying to get physicians to take call on other systems, everything's been somewhat consolidated, and we're in a county with 1 million people and haven't seen an increase in the cath lab capacity in some time. So I thought that from my standpoint, I think that if you are committed to developing a facilities plan in accordance with basic principles of safety and value, I think that if we fail to continue to make a change in the system, I think it's bad not only for the citizens of Wake County, but for the state. And we would not be precedent setting, because I sat here last year and listened to a petition from Raleigh Radiology for an MRI scanner where there was plenty of capacity in the county, but one was granted to them with a special needs consideration. So I think that we have to look at the unique complexities, at least, of the cardiac cath CON in our county and currently how the physicians are employed in the county, and try to match the resources with the places the work is being done. So just to give you an example, I think Dr. Jollis was just going to talk to you about a case last week, but this is something that happens to us every day, unfortunately.
Great, Jim. Thank you, Dr. Ulrich and committee. Thank you for having me. Again, my name is James Jollis, J-O-L-L-I-S. If you Google it and you put in volume of angioplasty, you'll see my name come up. I'm the volume antichrist. My paper back in 1992 said that you need high volume cath labs for safe outcomes. And thanks to your process in the state, we have a great system with not too many labs and concentrated care, and I'm a big supporter of the CON process. Mm-hmm. My other role, if you Google me, I work with systems across the state, so I've been to Carteret, I've been to Spruce Pine, I know Charlotte very well, both the Presby system, Novant, and CMC. I've been out in Mission and working with Duke and UNC and Wake Med. I'm on the physician advisory board for Wake EMS. We have this great heart attack care system in the state, probably the best anywhere. We track 8,000 STEMIs a year. We treat everyone quickly, 20% have no insurance, we never ask. And I go around the state working with these resources. But today I'm representing Rex Hospital, Rex UNC Healthcare. And the reason I'm here is because of actually Jim. The other night, a patient named Kathy R., she's in my clinic. She's had a very complicated angioplasty procedure 2 years earlier. She's only 50 years old. She's having recurrent angina. And her insurance is a $10,000 deductible to go in the hospital or not. And she can't choose where she wants to go. And I talked to her, and she sounds like she's having bad arrhythmia. She goes home. She gets scared. She comes to the ER. I call Jim because he's got great hands, good judgment on angioplasty. He meets her in the cath lab. He's ready to do the case. but there's no lab available. So he calls me, tells me there's just no space, and talks to the family, and she comes in overnight. She's a 25-beat run of VTAC about 3 in the morning. I was going to bring it with me. And luckily, she broke back into sinus on the cath the next day, very tight mid-right lesion, and she's just going to do very well. But this is really at the point where healthcare system changed a bit. And we're all under pressure to lower cost. It's no longer about individual cath labs, it's health systems. We have many great health systems, and I would say for our situation, we are stacked to the gills, and we really need help to take care of these patients. The other one I'll mention is Franklin County. So Mr. Bright's training director up there. I met him at Johnny's Barbecue 2 weeks ago, and they're now slammed. They lost their hospital, and people in Franklin County will drive to Franklin Regional, but they won't drive to Raleigh, so they're calling ambulances. They've got 8 rigs in the field, and now they're all busy. They're often no one able to come. And he's telling me I can't go to Rex Hospital because they won't activate the cath lab. And I said, that can't be true. I call, and that's actually true because we're just so packed. So this is an issue that not just affects Wake County, but really the whole area. We need to get out there and do some more support. Thank you very much for your time. And again, I really appreciate the whole process.
Thank you very much. Since we have time, are there any questions that any member of the council I would like to ask? And I'll start with Dr. McBride because his hand went up first.
So I just had a question. I know in Charlotte, that's where I'm from, there are employed physicians from Novant who work in the CHS system and do cases there. Can you explain a little bit better why you couldn't unload, you know, the elective casts that you do in one of the other facilities that are not so packed like you guys were?
Can I ask a question to connect to that because I think it's part of the story?
Sure.
So, you know, what was the, you know, the current state prior, you know, within Wake County, you know, prior to physicians picking sides? Because I think that ties into, you know, kind of, you know, that question.
So, two questions. First of all, for Charlotte, I was in a meeting there in 2005, the most tense meeting of my life. It was the Mercy cardiologist, the CMC cardiologist Sanger, and the Presbyterian cardiologist. They'd never been in each other's buildings. Tremendous competition, looking at one another, not wanting to work together, saying we couldn't do this. And Paul Colavita, an EP guy from CMC, said, we got to just do this with the patients. So they work together as systems, but they're highly competitive, and I can guarantee you they don't go around saying, can we share a call? How did this happen? Healthcare has changed. The big difference was that most cardiology money was out of nuclear scanners owned by offices. And a few years back, they cut that payment. So all of a sudden, all the cardiology offices were going broke. And so they've all been bought by hospitals. So we now all work for health systems. I'm a health system employee. And which is a good thing if you, I'm not taking political sides, but the concept is that with health systems, taking care of the entire patient will end up with better care or cheaper care. And that's really changed our lives now. It's no longer what hospital I work with. I work for a hospital system. And we have to work systematically. And that's probably the biggest change.
I'll just call as we go. So,
Dr. Zanzara, you're a highly respected cardiologist. I've known about you even though we never met. But there is something troubling about the fact that we have a Wake Med Cary and Wake Med Raleigh literally 5 minutes away. You yourself used to head cardiology. You've done many things that I'm not fully aware of. You're a very esteemed cardiologist. You were at Duke Raleigh, sir. Secondly, Wake Heart and Vascular in this county used to go to all the hospitals. And as Dr. Jarlis, is it, forgive me if I pronounce it incorrectly, mentioned that the government cut the rates and in essence made it difficult for the cardiologists with nuclear tests and echocardiograms and even something about consult fees in hospitals if somebody else saw a patient.
Facility
fees and so on. But if you think about it, if you're not a cardiologist, if you're a family physician, if you're an internist, you get peanuts compared to a cardiologist. And if we can survive, there ought to be a way of surviving. That's number one. Number two, when Wake Heart and Vascular decided to do something when there was a rapid reduction in income, and that's difficult to absorb, you know, I give you that. Wake Med CEO said no, he lost his job in the process. And everything the press at that time was, we're going to go everywhere. Then January 1st, 2015 came, and they decided to go only to one place. And when we consolidate healthcare, the purpose of consolidation is to increase value, as Dr. Zadar, you mentioned, you know, about value. But instead, what's happening, through consolidation, the insurance companies, and maybe Mr. Lewis can chime in, the insurance companies are not willing to negotiate anything. And you just gave an example of high deductible plans and all this. This is occurring. And again, you guys are phenomenal. I mean, I've heard of Zadar, Wake Heart Investing does great work. But cardiology is something that, you know, I mean, it's very important. You just gave real great examples. And as somebody else talked about, why can you not go to Wake Med Carrier Raleigh when they have 9 cardiac cath beds, only 4 of which are being utilized 5 minutes away, and reduce costs and still make it reasonable for all the citizens, not only of the state, but all the places that you guys serve?
So literally, people are now cut out of certain hospitals. So Wake Med, about 4 or 5 years ago, paid the largest fine in history for billing 5 years of inpatient hospitalizations were actually outpatient. And things kind of fell apart there. They have high costs, they have challenges. I have nothing to do with this. My office is in Cary today. My patients will go to Wake Cary if it helps them, but it's no longer that easy to go back and forth. And it's actually better than to go to Wake Cary and then take an ambulance across town to have your heart attack treated. Just go north on 440, about 5 minutes away, and be treated right away.
But on the other hand, you're talking about people being airlifted into your place, and then we're talking about 5 minutes away. The two don't jive. Secondly, all of us receive letters from the CEO of Wake Med that they'd like to sit down with you. Have you any updates on that?
Later in about 2 weeks, we're going to meet with them. Part of the problem, I think, is cardiology's changed a little bit. What we did 15 years ago, we don't do today. So if you look at the cath lab, more than half of what we do is urgent intervention. As an interventional cardiologist, I'm on a weekend. It's clear I'm going to be up after midnight a lot. So a call is much more onerous than it ever was. So if you're a 50-year-old guy and they say, you know what, why don't you consolidate your call into one hospital so that you can have a reasonable quality of life, or go to 3 hospitals and take call in 3 hospitals, most of the 50-year-olds are going to say, you know what, I'm going to go to that one system. So it's a practical thing. And I think if you were asked to get up at night, and I probably get on the nights I'm on call 4 or 5 calls after midnight, we're not doing people just from Wake County. We're taking transfers from Goldsboro and from Wilson and from Smithfield and from Sampson County and Franklin County. So it's become a referral site in eastern North Carolina where things aren't done in these other counties for sick people. And the utilization and the resources that we have are scarce for what we have. Even though some physicians, Dr. Jollis and I were both Duke physicians for over 20 years, went into this system in sort of some leadership roles, but the Wake Heart docs also came into this big North Carolina group. At the same time, a large Carolina cardiology group left Rex and went solely to Wake Med. So there were people moving both ways. You know, in the end of the day, it just sort of settled out where it settled out. But I mean, I think it's somewhat practical as to most of the cath lab utilization we have is so urgent because we're scrutinized on any elective intervention. You got to meet these things called AUC, appropriate use criteria, that are making sure that you're not doing things that you shouldn't be doing. And we're being watched by National American College of Cardiology, the Society of Cardiac Angiography and Intervention. So it's closely scrutinized. The people that we're really doing more of are the really urgent, unstable, non-ST elevation infarcts, STEMIs, the sick people. Those are the people that are taking up more of the cath lab time. Just for us to have 4 labs is just not enough for the amount of work being done. And it's going to continue to go up. People moving down here from Maryland, North Carolina, New Jersey, New York, they're older people. They have lots of heart disease. And they come down and they've already had 6 stents put in somewhere in Long Island. And, you know, you never meet them until 2 a.m. and tell you these stories. And it happens every day.
But the question is, what precludes 5 of your cardiologists working at Wake Med Cary Raleigh? And that's beyond us. You used to go everywhere.
Well, Wake Med Cary doesn't do any angioplasty there, so that really wouldn't help us. That's the most underutilized lab in the state. So they just do elective diagnostic casts and then transfer them to Big Wake. Duke Raleigh does more EP studies, but does some casts there. So the only option for us would be Wake Med. We'd have to go into that call rotation. Mm-hmm. Because they're not going to let you have privileges without being part of the call, because that's kind of one of the onerous things of being a cardiologist now.
But Wake Med Perry can do intervention because just last year, Dr. Janice was speaking here for interventions in Johnson County, Johnson County.
They do them in Johnson County, and those are people that are part of our group do that.
Yeah, we authorized it.
Right.
So if Wake Med Perry has cardiac cath beds, they don't do it, but they most certainly can do it.
I know, that's not my decision to do that, though. That's something decided by the Wake Meds. I don't know. I'm just trying to get the people that come and see us to have, instead of showing up at 8 o'clock in the morning for an elective cath, getting bumped and bumped and bumped and finally getting on the table at 7:30, it's really unfair to that family. And they get pulled off the table time and again from people coming in from the emergency room who are unstable or coming in off of a helicopter. And it's not right. And I think we need to change it. And I'll stand up here to anybody and defend it because it's not fair.
Sir. Is it right to get a rebate on a cardiac stent that's put in by a cardiologist?
Get a rebate? Not sure what you're doing.
Meaning money coming back to the cardiologist for something that they put in.
It may not be
happening now, but it used to happen in Wake County. So, you know, here we have the same cardiologists who were going everywhere to exclusively go one place, and now those things, you're talking about appropriate use and so on. But there were so many things that were happening in the past. And now, as you mentioned, you have AUC criteria and all that. All of a sudden, things change.
Yeah.
And when things change, you went to a more expensive institution.
No, the cost at Rex is much less because it's a community-based hospital. It doesn't get any Medicare adjustments for teaching facilities like in the Duke system or in Wake Med. So actually, for the same DRG, for heart failure, for ST elevation MI, non-Q-wave MI, you get paid about 40% less than the other hospitals in the county. So it's actually the lowest cost provider.
It's not just Medicare, it's Blue Cross, it's Cigna, it's United.
Well, true. So I would say that if you look at the reimbursement, the UNC physician groups and the Duke physician groups have the highest reimbursement in the county, probably based on quality outcomes.
Kurt?
Since it's been quite a while, and we have new people, and it's a new year. This issue was heavily visited in our September meeting, if I'm not mistaken. And I think that we had a overturning of. So could you fill me? Remind
probably
me?
The
please.
This particular issue in Wake County has generated several petitions and methodology suggestions. And to some degree, I have felt that this committee, as a statewide committee, is being asked to solve a Wake County business dispute, which is not our direct mission. But the incident last year was there was a petition, I believe, for additional capacity that was, I think, a special need petition.
Right.
The Technology and Equipment Committee voted to a tie, which means that the agency recommendation for adoption was not accepted. It was extracted at our fall meeting by a vote of the entire council. A vigorous discussion ensued. I can see Dr. Jollis kind of doing the body language back there. And to the disappointment of the Rex team, the council voted by, I think, a 4-5 vote majority to not accept the agency recommendation, which means status quo. I think all of us, I can't speak for all of us, I've recently been in receipt of letters from both the leadership at Rex and at Wake, at least indicating that there is an opportunity to have a discussion. And I welcome that, even though I don't have a direct role in it. The problem is not a statewide problem. It is unique to this shift. And those of us from Charlotte, and I think Rob McBride will confirm this, is we've gone through this consolidation in an earlier point in time. Rebalancing did occur. We're pretty much in balance with capacity in that particular market at this time. And I'm not aware of any other market where this is playing out today the same way. I made the statement that at some point we need to put patients first. It's also recognizing that for six straight years, cath volume, which is mostly routine cath volume, has been falling.
across the state. It's actually, I think, going, I know it's not a huge decline, but it, even though the population's going up, the utilization of cath labs is dropping. Some of that may be just CT coronary angiography is starting to take up some of the diagnostic, lots of different things, a lot of moving parts. But that was the history of, you know, of last year, and I've been expecting another either methodology proposal or a special need petition. If the local discussions could produce a salutary outcome, because we do our methodologies on a county basis, there is more than adequate capacity on a county-wide basis, as our doctors have told us, as people don't move freely. And this methodology was designed at a time when physicians were much more freely moving than they do today. And the assumption is that the market will level back to the to take up the capacity based on where it's available. What they're telling us is it's not happening. Now, we can argue about who made the bad decision, you know, who the impact is. I would obviously prefer not to mess with the methodology if a local solution can be found.
A couple of things. One is Charlotte has two very strong systems, Novant and Carolinas.
Yes,
we're almost the same size county. we're the same size county as Mecklenburg, maybe just a few thousand difference. Yeah. And we don't have that same balance. Yeah. And the point is, it's not a physician issue or a health system issue, it's a patient issue. Patients can no longer go to any place to get care. They're now in these health systems. And I think Jim and I both would be more than willing to go wherever it would take to have people do better. But this is never going to happen in Wake County.
As I say, the assumptions and underlying the methodology were of a much more liberal distribution model in the market. It's something we probably need to come back to and think about as a statewide issue. As I said, I believe that there are two things about this plan which we should always keep in mind. One is that we have to put patients first. If we do what's right by patients, a lot of other things will sort out. And what people lose sight of in the methodologies are that, and it's relatively unique in the regulatory environments of the state, is our methodologies are what I would call patient-centric. That is, they are driven by patient demand utilization, not by hospital grandiose building plans or marketing schemes, not by physician self-driven, self-referral, self-aggrandizement facility development, but based on the patient utilization and need, and our attempts to keep the balance relatively close, so that we have the high volume, high quality that you alluded to earlier, but also have adequate access. And I think everybody recognizes from last year's decision there is an imbalance in terms of that situation at the present time. How to fix it is what we're going to struggle with.
We need your help.
Well, anyway, that's did I answer your question, Kurt, in sort of a soapbox?
Yeah, absolutely.
Rob, you have anything to add to that from your perspective?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. So.
Thank you all very much for taking the time.
I've kept you from your patient. You had a but thank you both of you.
Got my quality score in.
That's right, you're on the clock. Is there anyone else who at the last minute has decided that they would like to address the council on any issue of their choosing? Seeing no others who have indicated that they want to speak, I will entertain a motion to adjourn the public hearing.
So moved.
Second it? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. I will now reconvene the CHIC meeting that we were on prior to the public hearing. Is there any old business that the CHIC needs to address today? Then, hearing no response, I would like a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Move. Second. All right. The meeting is adjourned. Thanks very much, everyone.